listener emailed me recently and sent me an article by Jim Hightower about the financial meltdown, a column in his newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown, in which he named the five most wanted men from Wall Street and Washington. The listener hoped we could get Jim Hightower on the program to talk about who or what is to blame for the current financial crisis and maybe get his thoughts, too, on the auto bailout. Well, we will do that and more this hour with Jim Hightower, who is our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Idea Network. It's 10 past 8 on this Wednesday, December the 10th. We welcome your questions for Jim Hightower, who will be with us for most of the hour. He'll have to leave a little bit early, so get your calls in soon. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest, Jim Hightower, syndicated columnist, national radio commentator. He writes the monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown, which has more than 125,000 subscribers, including one of our listeners, as I mentioned. He is the author of several books, including his latest, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Jim Hightower, good morning.
Hi, Joy. Great to be with you and all those great radio heads all across Wisconsin.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. You know, when we invited you to be on, in part it was because of this listener's suggestion. She was intrigued by getting your thoughts on the financial meltdown and the auto bailout. But this, I wanted to start with a story that's leading the newscasts today. And let's take a listen to U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald yesterday announcing that Illinois' governor has been arrested.
But the most cynical behavior in all this, the most appalling, is the fact that Governor Blagojevich tried to sell the appointment to the Senate seat vacated by President-elect Obama. The conduct would make Lincoln roll over in his grave. The governor's own words describing the Senate seat, quote, "It's a bleeping valuable thing, you just don't give it away for nothing," close quote. Another quote, "I've got this thing, and it's bleeping golden."
Well, well, what do you think of that, Jim Hightower?
Well, it gives a whole new meaning to the name Blagojevich, doesn't it? It turns it into a verb. I think I'm going to Blagojevich.
Yeah, it's easy for you to say.
A disgrace. It's a shame, you know. It's a shame for the good people of Illinois. This is a governor that whom I gather has about a 4% approval rating before this information came out. So I guess he's going to be in negative territory now.
Yeah, you don't think Barack Obama in any way is going to be tainted by this?
No, he had nothing to do with it. I'm sure there will be efforts, but my God, we tried to attach everything to Obama in the last campaign, so I don't think this is a problem for him, but it's a problem generally, and I certainly agree with Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois, and others who say that now Blagojevich cannot make any appointment to the U.S. Senate because it would be totally suspect. So the best way is to have a straightforward election.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if our listeners have any reactions or questions about that as well as we go along. I wanted to ask you, especially today, the Congress might vote on the revised auto bailout today. What are your thoughts on that? Should the government extend these loans that will keep the car makers going through the end of the year?
Yes, unhappily, but yes, not because of the boneheads who run these companies. They have become a national joke. I mean, you know, couldn't they have jet pooled to Washington? I mean, taken one jet instead of all three, or you know, gotten a Greyhound ticket or something, and gone in there with their hat in hand. So that, you know, but that's not the real disgrace. The real disgrace is what they've done to the auto industry. The failure is not on the part of the auto workers. It's not on the part of the auto dealers across the country or the millions of other people who are dependent for their employment on this industry. The failure has been up in the executive suites where these goober heads have just been disdainful of the buying public, producing cars that, guess what, the American people don't want to buy because the cars have been poorly designed. and wrongly designed in terms of fuel efficiency and et cetera. So the result is folks have not been buying their cars, and that's why I think if we're going to do the bailout, that we do have to set some real specific terms, particularly in terms of the environmental quality of these cars. Though I will say the quality of the automobiles themselves have been improving over the last several years. But it's important for all of us to realize that because there's an effort that I think is disgusting, Joy, and that is an effort, and Republicans in the Senate are carrying that on right now, to blame auto workers, to say that they're the cause, that their good pay and benefits, that that's what's knocking down the auto industry, and so they're demanding that the workers take another kick in the shorts as a part of this bailout. But in fact, the pay of American auto workers is not that much higher than the pay of the Japanese auto workers in this country. The difference, of course, is in health care. The Japanese industry, the Japanese people have universal health care paid for through the government and through taxpayers, and that is not the case here in this country. That's the real hickey that we have in terms of pay, which is an argument for some form of universal health care in our country, so you're not dependent on your job or even whether you have a job to be able to have health care for you and your family. But I'm really offended by this this effort. There's a guy named Corker, believe it or not, a senator from Tennessee, Bob Corker, and he's a real Corker, and he's really been on his high horse last few days, just lambasting the pay that auto workers make as being exorbitant. Well, first of all, his pay is more than twice what an auto worker's is, and he doesn't have to produce a product. He doesn't have to have any particular skill, and he certainly doesn't do any heavy lifting. But secondly, I would say, isn't it a good thing that we have people in our country who set a standard for middle-class life, that they're able to afford a home, to buy a car, that they're able to have vacations, put their kids through college? Seems to me that's the American ideal.
Yeah, but aren't you afraid, as some are, that this $15 billion in loans is—that's just a start, and that the automakers, the Detroit Three, may not be viable in the long term. We would just be tossing, as President Bush put it, good money after bad.
Well, it's kind of interesting that that would come from George W., isn't it? How much good money has he tossed down the hole of Iraq? How much good money has he tossed into corporate giveaways, oil corporation subsidies? The richest corporations in the world were continuing to subsidize them. He seems to have no reticence to do that. But secondly of all, we can. This is a viable industry. People around the world buy cars, and we're in a worldwide slump right now. Even Toyota is suffering from that. But that's going to come back. I don't see how you have an America without having some basic industries. What we have to do is, as members of Congress are suggesting, the leadership itself has to be replaced. We have to get some people in there who want to design cars, and we want to listen to the American public and design cars that we want. Most Americans, I think, would rather buy an American car if it was the equivalent of what the automakers in the other parts of the world are making. And so that's the key. The industry itself is a viable industry, but we have to be competitive in that, and that's not a case of putting more burden on the backs of the people who actually make the cars. It's putting the burden on the management and the designers of those cars.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Jim Hightower, on why it seemingly was so easy to pass a $700 billion bailout for the financial services industry, and it's not so easy for the automakers?
Well, one company, Citigroup, has gotten $300 billion from the bailout, $300 billion, including loan guarantees from the Federal Reserve, which is what more than 10 times what the total auto industry bailout would be from their first request. It is what we have here is not just a class divide; we have a class chasm. The head of Citigroup makes $216 million a year. But nobody's in the Congress suggested that he take a pay cut. And so he's enjoying that pay and even was up to get a bonus for his work in the past year. There's a total hypocrisy and a double standard at work here.
Our guest is Jim Hightower, syndicated columnist. He writes the monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. He's also a national radio commentator. And he's commentating with us right now about issues in the news, from bailouts to corruption to whatever you want to ask him about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll get to your calls after this break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We just heard Kathleen Dunn talking about her topic after 9 o'clock. She will be talking with guests about that sit-in going on at Republic Windows and Doors. Workers who are upset that their plant was closed and that Bank of America did not lend any money to the company to keep it open, and they were asking for their vacation and benefits at least to get taken care of. Turns out that late yesterday, Bank of America did agree to loan the company some money so it can pay the workers, though the plant will remain closed. Let me, Jim Hightower, ask you your thoughts on what happened in Chicago. These workers are saying, how come this $700 billion bailout for banks didn't stop Republic Window and Doors from closing?
Well, I just get pumped up just thinking about those 250 workers in that plant who stood up not just for themselves at long last, but stood up for all of us, really, to say, we're sick of this tinkle-down economics that we're getting in this country, where the rich keep getting more and the rest of us get stiffed. And so they said, no, we're not leaving the plant here. Not demanding anything unreasonable at all, simply demanding what they're already owed in terms of severance pay and that sort of thing, vacation pay that they had not gotten. And this because of a company, Bank of America, that had gotten $25 billion from us taxpayers as a bailout. And so, yes, I'm very, very proud of those workers, and I think they've inspired people, and I think you're going to see more people now standing up around the country saying, hell no, this is fundamentally unfair and un-American.
We have so many callers who want to talk with you. Let me go to the phones. Scott in Beaver Dam joins us first. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I guess the only thing I wanted to take issue is your point about the auto industry not making cars that the American people wanted. And that's totally false. I mean, we wanted trucks and SUVs, and that's what we wanted when gas prices are low. And those are very profitable vehicles for the auto industry. And when you're at a competitive disadvantage in the small car market, which they are, because they have about $2,300 in labor costs that Toyota and Honda don't have, their labor costs are about $71 an hour compared to the $43 an hour that you get at Toyota and Honda. And
that's not true.
No,
their labor cost is not, what did you say, $45?
Roughly $45.
Yeah. No, there's a big story in the New York Times this morning. I urge you to look at that on the front page about the truth about the labor cost. And again, the major division in the labor cost is the health care difference that is there, because we don't have universal health care in this country. But the actual wage cost is very comparable. For example, the base wage in this country for auto workers, $29 for Japanese in America, making cars in America, their wage cost is $26. So there's really only a $3 difference there.
Yeah, but what about Scott's point that the big three did build the cars we wanted? We wanted at that time the SUVs.
Well, they told us we wanted them, and that's what they pushed on us. But then the market changed And our industry made no change whatsoever. And, you know, this sudden thing about the auto efficiency, this didn't happen in the last year. This has been building over the last several years. And other auto companies saw that coming and built for it and also pushed it, pushed the idea. But the caller is right. They make much more profit on the big SUVs than they do on smaller cars. But that doesn't mean the smaller cars are unprofitable. How much profit do they have to have? And don't they have some responsibility to the larger public and to larger public goals like global warming and environmental issues?
Now we go to Boyd in Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Very good.
All right. Thank you. And hello to you, Jim. Good
Hi.
To hear from you again. You know, I'm going to touch off on the whole healthcare thing, too. Do you think with what's going on, I mean, Jim, you did mention about, you know, the problem is healthcare. I have a feeling that that is going to be brought to the forefront and engaged a lot more. And there's going to be, I think, even more broader changes than originally what President-elect Obama had wanted. He wanted to do something where he could at least waive pre-existing conditions. I really just think, I don't know if we're going to go to a single-payer system immediately, but I could see an expansion of Medicare. And when you really do your homework, even though people are sort of spooked by the socialized medicine concept, which it seems to be labeled, and that there's this huge bureaucracy. Ben Marins a few months ago had a guest on his show that, and it was actually, it's all documented, that Medicare is actually the most efficient system right now in this country. I guess my question, you think there's going to be maybe at least for the expansion of Medicare and then kind of go from there?
Yes, I do. And I think it's, you're right that it's going to be bolder than Obama himself has proposed thus far. And I think it's going to be bolder because it has to be. And this auto crunch that we're now seeing is evidence of it. It has always puzzled me that auto companies have not been in Washington demanding some form of universal health care, extension of Medicare to everybody, for example, to take that burden off of them. They know that that is the competitive disadvantage that they have with Japanese and other automakers around the world. And so, but I guess because of the corporate brotherhood or whatever, they've been unwilling to challenge the system. But now we have to challenge the system. You should not be dependent on whether you have a job, much less which job you have, as to whether you and your family get taken care of when you're sick. And to me, it's an abomination that that being sick makes a profit for somebody. That should not be the case. So I think we've got to have some form of single payer type of system, and that, by the way, is not socialized medicine. I'm against socialized medicine because it just becomes a bureaucracy like the insurance giants are. We have the biggest bureaucracy in healthcare in the world in those insurance giants, and they are siphoning off the biggest chunk of the money. They get some roughly 30% of the health dollars that we spend go through them, whereas you indicate that Medicare costs only 10 to 11% of the total health dollar goes to the administration of it.
Next, we go to Laverne in Monroe. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Jim.
Hi.
I met you up at the Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo.
One of the world's greatest events, Fighting Bob Fest.
Just
and,
ask
and you and Granny D were terrific. I was wearing a purple shirt that said Tax Hedge Fund Dealers.
I don't
know if you remember me or not.
Yeah. Well, I remember your shirt. Let me put it like that. Now, yes, indeed. By the way, Granny D has just turned 99 years of age.
She just got done reading her book.
Yep.
Fantastic. Walk Across the United States for Campaign Finance Reform. That's what's caused the problem in Illinois. Now, while I think bailing out these investment bankers are pushing all those toxic derivatives, I'm not so sure if I'd want to bail them people out. The car industry, I think, yes, that probably is a good idea. But somewhere we got to get the money, and I think what's wrong with taxing those hedge fund dealers, particularly the ones that go offshore and into the Switzerland? These people are a bunch of crooks. We got to get some revenue from these people.
I'm on your side.
Yeah, the column that the listener sent was somewhat related. It was the five most wanted men in Washington and Wall Street. You said that our economy didn't melt down. This wasn't a financial meltdown. It was our economy was taken down by ideological extremists. You want to name some names?
Yeah, happy to. I call them the laissez fairies, the people who deliberately deregulated the system and allowed this speculative Ponzi scheme to be created on Wall Street. Number one was from right here in my state of Texas, Phil Graham, longtime U.S. senator here, and in his last couple of years as senator, he was chair of the Senate Banking Committee, and he ran through two major changes. One was to undo something called the Glass-Steagall Act, which was a New Deal reform. It prohibited banks and investment houses and insurance companies from being combined into one corporation, because the idea was that that if one of those components, say banking, went down, still insurance and investment would be all right. But if you combine them all, any one of them would take down the other two, which is what has just happened. Yet Graham is the guy who deliberately took that firewall away from the conglomerating of those three units of the financial system. And then he came through with another little gimmick. And by the way, this was ran through in an 11,000-page appropriation bill right at the Christmas break, in the 11th hour, literally. He snuck into that 11,000-page appropriation bill just a little tiny change that nobody noticed except the lobbyists who were pushing for it, and that was to deregulate this thing called derivatives. Not only was the government not going to regulate derivatives, they were not even allowed to monitor what was going on. Now those derivatives amount to more than $500 trillion in our economy, more than than our actual economy generates. So in other words, we're in this speculative bubble fantasy world, and that's the deliberate result of Phil Graham. Graham, by the way, Joy, once ran for president, and when he did, I saw on television, because Graham had stuck his foot in his mouth again on something or other, and the senator said, well, sometimes Phil Graham's his own worst enemy, and I said, not while I'm alive, he's not. And this is why, because it's been a complete excuse my language here, but a complete whore to the corporate world, and particularly to the financial world. And now that he left the Senate, where is he? He is chief lobbyist for UBS, a Swiss-based bank that is also in line to get bailout money from us taxpayers.
You know, yesterday the CEOs of Fannie and Freddie were testifying before Congress, and it did come up that, you know what, Congress, you wanted us to extend loans to higher risk people, lower income people, so partly this is because of that.
Well, actually it turns out to be a very tiny part of it. Yes, Congress did want to, and the public wanted lower income working families who were financially eligible, though, to get loans, wanted it. What they didn't want was this gimmickry of which their subprime loans were then had the explosive interest rate increase on them. And what we had was companies like Countrywide go all out and hustle people into saying, hey, no interest down, free money, you don't really ever have to pay it back, just sign right here. And they made their commissions, the people who were hustling these loans through companies like Countrywide, made their commissions on just being able to sign people up, not on the quality of the loan at all. They weren't evaluating the quality. Congress didn't ask them to do that. They asked them to make responsible loans. And by the way, some 75% of the these subprime loans that were made are functioning loans today, because they were made by responsible banks, banks like Shore Bank based in Chicago there, that has done extensive work like this. Other banks have as well and are not in trouble. The ones who got in trouble are those who then created a Ponzi scheme on top of these loans, something called securitization of those loans, sold those to global speculators, and then when these hucksters who had generated these bad loans, when those loans began to collapse, the whole system, the whole Ponzi scheme, the house of cards came down.
Well, I know there are others on the most wanted list, but we have so many other callers. People can read more about that in the Hightower Lowdown. Sean in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just like to make a quick comment that I don't think we should really be calling the economics that's going on trickle-down economics. Seems more like drip economics to me, a very slow drip at that. That's all I got to say, thanks.
Well, I call it tinkle-down economics, actually, rather than trickle-down. But what we need is a percolate-up economics, and I'm boosted in spirit by the call that Obama is making for percolate-up economics with a new program to get a massive program, by the way, to get out there and redo the infrastructure of this country, which every town knows is in trouble. Everything from aging sewer systems to bridges to roads, school buildings, parks, etc. America has work that needs to be done, and we have workers who need the work. So let's put the two of them together and rebuild America.
How hopeful are you, Jim Hightower, that Barack Obama and his plan, his stimulus, and his economic team are going to be able to get us out of this mess?
Oh, I think they will, because the American people will get us out of the mess. Because they are turning to the people. They're not saying, let's give all the money to a handful of corporations or more tax cuts to the rich and pretend that that's going to actually do anything in terms of a recovery program. It's not a stimulus program we need. We need recovery. And that's got to be a grassroots effort. So I'm encouraged that they are talking in those terms. Let's invest in the people themselves at the ground level and then build it from there. Now, I know that there'll be, there are 13,000 corporate lobbyists in Washington, and they're going to be swarming the White House and of course the Congress, as they always do, to try to turn this into another corporate program. But I'm encouraged because Obama intends to open up a new channel for the Netroots Nation to communicate directly, bypassing even the lobbyists. And communicate directly in terms of making national policy. So I think we're just going to see a new world here in the way government functions and who gets to be inside.
Next we go to Daniel in Rice Lake. Good morning.
Hello. Other than Gonzalez, Myers, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, and Tennant, who else would you advise Bush pardon before he leaves office? Can Bush constitutionally pardon himself?
Oh, well, God. I was going to say he ought to do something for himself as well.
I didn't hear Libby on that list.
Yeah,
Daniel.
Where's Libby? Yeah, I think there's any number that we can Josh Bolton and any number of people who can get on the list there. To me, Congress has failed. Congress did not hold these people's feet to the fire, hold them accountable for what they have done to the Constitution and to our country. And by failing to do that, Congress abdicated its responsibility and basically sanctioned what has gone on. I have no idea whether Obama, the Justice Department, and others are now going to look at some of these, to put it as nicely as I can, misdeeds, if not just outright illegalities, and bring them to the bar of justice. Some people need to be brought to the bar of justice, because this isn't about partisanship. This is about our constitutional responsibility to hold the executive responsible. Otherwise, we have executive supremacy, and that's not America.
I was talking with U.S. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin the other day.
Terrific citizen.
Yes, and this came up, the issue of pardons came up, and specifically that there was talk that maybe Bush was going to be pardoning Gonzalez. And Senator Feingold was, you know, he wasn't sure that Bush would actually do such a thing because there would be such outrage. And he says President Bush does care about his legacy. And if he pardoned all those people that Daniel just listed off, that would just destroy it even more than it already has been.
Well, you know, I wish I could think as positively about Bush as even Russ Feingold does there. But you know, he's shown himself to be loyal to the most mendacious people, and he brought those mendacious people into government. And so, you know, his notion, as we've seen in recent days in the new Bush legacy tour, and we saw yesterday the news that the that he, even a memo has gone out.
Yeah, talking points are out.
Talking points of how to describe Bush. That the guy is beyond delusional. I mean, he's just in fantasy land about himself. And so I'm sure that he thinks that he can do no wrong, and he can pardon his buddies, and he'll get kudos from that people, the kind of world that he runs in. By the way, he's moving back to Dallas. He bought himself a nice 8,500-square-foot home in Preston Hollow. His neighbors are going to be Tom Hicks, the owner of Clear Channel and owner of the Texas Ranger baseball team. His neighbor's going to be T. Boone Pickens. So that's the crowd that he cares about, and they would look fondly on these pardons.
We are talking with Jim Hightower, and you can, too, for just the next few minutes. Jim Hightower will be departing at about 10:02. So call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us, talk@WPR.org. What we're going to do to finish off the hour, just get your thoughts. We'll let you sound off on the auto bailout bill that could be voted on today in Congress, and wonder if you want to see the auto companies get some money that will hold them over through the end of the year. That'll be our straw poll question coming up at about 10:02. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to be talking with Jim Hightower. He is a columnist, a radio commentator, an author. His latest book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. He is also the author of the monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. And we are talking with him about current issues in the news. He was a listener request. We're always happy to talk with Jim Hightower. And our next caller is Nick in Sparta. Hi, you're on the air.
Morning, Joy. Morning. Just had a quick comment and then a question, I guess. My comment I just wanted to make, it seems as though these days everybody's telling us that American cars are inferior to Japanese and foreign products. I just wanted to comment on that and say, right at this time, actually, I'm driving a GM, an American car. I've got 217,000 miles on it. I'm on my fifth Porsche that I've got in the driveway. I've got an 04 now, and I've been nothing but happy with them. I don't understand how anybody can tell me that that's an inferior product. Secondly, I just wanted to say, with the current state of the economy, with our auto industry and the recent bailout that we had in Wall Street, couldn't we say that part of this is just a product of democracy? It seems as though the rich keep getting richer and the poor just keep getting poorer. Even our own representatives, those people within Congress and within government, keep getting their pockets lined by these companies, and therefore it seems like they're taking advantage of us.
Well, I agree. I don't think that's democracy, though. I think that's plutocracy, or more appropriately, kleptocracy, government by thieves. And I think that's what we have with the corporate interest using their money that money doesn't just talk, it shouts, and it shouts down the voice of the people themselves. And I agree with the caller that, as I said earlier, the quality of the American cars in terms of automotive quality, not in terms of fuel efficiency and global warming issues, but in terms of automotive quality, has improved greatly. I drive a 1997 Ford Escort, and it's a terrific car. You know, I'm doing great with it.
Thank you, Nick. Jim in Salt Lake City is with us now. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Good to hear your voice, Jim. Question for you. Who would you like to see appointed car czar, and why?
Ooh, car czar. Well, I haven't given that enough thought. How about Ralph Nader? He needs something to do.
Okay.
Well, that was quick. But what, Jim Hightower, is that a good idea to have somebody, I don't know, on the from the federal government, sort of the chief CEO of the car companies?
Well, I don't think it's going to be that, and no, I don't think that would be a good thing. I think it's a chief oversight officer is what this guy is, who or gal, whoever it's going to be, who knows. But I don't know if it's smart or not, but we certainly need oversight, which, by the way, on the bank bailout, the Wall Street bailout, we have no oversight. They've been given the money, and by the way, they've not been given $700 billion. That's what Congress approved. They've been already been given $8 trillion in Federal Reserve loans and guarantees that have been put out through the back door that Congress doesn't even know about. It didn't go through Congress. And Congress, nor the public, the media, we're not even told who gets that money. They're saying it's proprietary information. Well, hello, it's our money. So yes, we need to monitor and strict oversight of who's getting these dollars and what they're doing with it, and that they do comply with some public needs, such as we're going to get fuel efficient cars, and that the auto industry is going to convert to something other than SUVs.
Next is Rodney in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Rodney, go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to make a statement, ma'am, and I want to. Mr. Hightower, it's good to meet you, sir. You're a great American.
Thank you, sir.
I want you to reiterate, and I'll just hang up. I saw a program on national public TV where a gentleman went to six different countries, European countries, comparing the CEO's salary to here in the United States. It averaged eight times the CEO versus the blue-collar worker in European countries. Thailand included in that, but here they said the average CEO in the United States made 800 times what the blue collar worker did, and I think that's ridiculous. And I say cutting salaries, when you cut theirs, start with theirs, and we'll talk about mine. Thank you.
Well put. I don't think I need to add much to that.
Well, aren't the CEOs of the car companies saying that they'll do this for a buck a year now?
Oh, well, yeah, that's very generous of them, because they're pressed to do it. Again, we should have done the same with the Wall Street interests, but we didn't. The Congress made a little political gesture in that direction, but it turns out that their limitation on executive compensation for the Wall Street people who are getting the bailout doesn't apply to the current contracts or past contracts. It only applies to any future contract that the CEO has with the company. So they're continuing to get their high pay. And by the way, the companies can pay them as much as they want. It's just the tax deductibility of it by the corporation that the Congress imposed on it. And since we're giving them billions of dollars, then in essence, we're still subsidizing whatever salary the CEO can squeeze out of the company.
I'm not sure. I think it was Senator Dodd who was saying that GM CEO Rick Wagoner just shouldn't be allowed to stay on, that he should be fired. Would you agree?
I agree. I mean, I think these guys are failures, and it's time we begin to say that to CEOs. You're no longer mini gods. You're no longer the big studs that you say you are. You have failed. And, you know, if a worker failed, that worker would be out the door. Our previous caller said it well. There's just a standard here that is insane, and no society should tolerate it.
Yeah, well, I know we have to let you go. Do you want to leave us with any final or concluding thoughts on this?
Just that I have great hope for America if we will just trust the Americans, the people themselves. We've seen that the corporate barons are failing us. So we've got to take charge at a grassroots level. That's how Obama got elected. To me, the most significant thing about the Obama phenomena is not Obama, it's the phenomena. Mm-hmm. The fact that millions of people on their own, organized, contributed the money, produced the Get Out the Vote program, and produced the votes that put him in. So there's a serious spirit for fundamental change in this country, a change from tinkle-down economics to percolate up. Obama seems to be getting that message, how bold he'll be, how strong he'll be on it. You know, we'll see. But we have to be inside. We can't just now crank back in our lazy boys and say, okay, we put Obama in, he'll take care of it. You can't. You can't win from the inside. You got to have the outsiders coming in, and that's us. So I take great hope in our future because of the people themselves, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jim Hightower, syndicated columnist, national radio commentator. He writes the monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown, and he is the author of many books. His latest, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. We thank him for being with us, and we thank the listener who suggested that we invite Jim Hightower back on the program. And thanks to Carmen Jackson, who arranged this interview, and thanks to Rob Ferret and to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. Now that we have a few more minutes, let's welcome your calls on the auto bailout as it stands now. Apparently, a few more details still need to be worked out on this agreement between the White House and Congress over the auto bailout. Lawmakers, though, say they could be voting on the bailout package for U.S. automakers later today. However, there aren't many Republicans in Congress who seem to be on board and may be voting against this $15 billion plan. The plan would provide $15 billion in loans for the auto industry to tide them over at least through the end of the year. Do you want Congress to pass this bailout or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We will take your calls. Make it quick so we can get as many calls as possible in. Mike in Milwaukee is with us first. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I would vote absolutely no.
How come?
And it's not a matter of quality. You know, the U.S. car makers have been getting J.D. Power's Car of the Year endorsements for over 10 years. But during that same period of time, the U.S. automakers' market share of the American market has fallen from 60% to 20%. Why? Because these endorsements don't neutralize a buyer's personal bad experience with the U.S. automaker. Made car. This leads us back to sales. They make a product that people don't want to buy. What happened when these cars don't sell after the bailout? Another bailout? This is just welfare.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mike, for the call. We'll go to another Mike, this one in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I would say they absolutely must not be bailed out, and primarily because the executives must go. There's just too much hubris there. That's the same thing that got us into trouble in the first place here. And I would also blame the unions a wee little bit because the members have been too busy entertaining themselves with sports, et cetera, to educate themselves on political issues. Bush shouldn't have been reelected in 2004, but everybody was entertaining themselves and listening to people like Rush Limbaugh bring back the fairness doctrine.
So you're saying don't bail them out?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for the call. So far, two no's. How about you? 1-800-642-1234, or I guess you can send an email, talk@wpr.org. Steve in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, bail them out. We need to. Loan them the money. And I've owned an Astro van, an aluminum van, and a Venture van. Two out of three of them were really not what I expected them to be. But the last one was built in 99. I just got rid of it. I'm ready to give them another chance.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Our first yes, help out the automakers. Tell us why you want the bailout or don't want the bailout. Doug in Northern Michigan, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say that I just cannot believe the guts of Congressman Dodd calling for the resignation of the chairman of GM because of the state of the auto industry after he presided over the banking committee that ran the whole country into the ground. I mean, I think they should give him the bailout, but the people that are that he wants overlooking the auto industry, we should have people overlooking him and his bunch up there, too.
Well, maybe. Well, why do you want the automakers to get a bailout?
Well, I live in Michigan, and you know, it's much deeper than just the auto plants. It's the parts, and you know, I know people right here that are going to be affected deeply by the same thing. We can't bail everybody out, but I think this is an important enough industry to give them a helping hand.
Thank you very much, Doug, from calling from Michigan. Next, we are going to go to Kathy in Wapaka. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks, Joy. I vote yes, and it's not because I am a big fan of the auto industry, but there are so many industries that are dependent on it for work. One of them is here in this city of Wapaka, Wapaka Foundry. It's a gray iron foundry, makes brake rotors. Anything that affects the big three, they go down, a lot of smaller businesses will go down with them. That's all I have to say. Thank you,
Kathy. I appreciate your saying it. We're just spending the last few minutes of the program getting your thoughts on the auto bailout. Congress could vote today on a $15 billion plan, and we wonder if you think it should pass or not, and why or why not. Carl in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
I vote no, and I don't think it's the CEO's problem. I think it's an indictment against the anarchic capitalist system, and I think that the employees should that the automakers should go bankrupt, and the workers should get control of those facilities as creditors, since they surrender their work to the employer for, you know, a week before they get paid. So in fact, they're collectively a creditor.
Yeah, thank you very much, Carl, for the call. This isn't necessarily an official straw poll, so I haven't really been keeping count. Seems to me it's about even right now. Jim in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm for the bailout. I don't blame the unions for the problems of the companies, and I do agree the executive compensation should be looked at, but no one ever asks or talks about how many salaried employees are in these companies and what their total compensation is. You never ever hear about what they get paid or what their bonuses are, and certainly those people get paid holidays and they get health care when they retire, and that's all part of the problem.
Thank you very much, Jim. Mike in Kenosha is next. Oh, hi, Mike. You're on the air. Mike, with all the car sounds in the background. All right. Never mind, Mike. Mike does not support the bailout, but we can't hear why. Doug in Mount Horeb. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm for the bailout as long as they amend it in conference committee. The amendment would be that since GM stock is selling for less than Bed Bath & Beyond stock, that they bail out GM by buying the company, giving the stock in the company to all of the workers, and letting the workers have their first shareholder meeting to elect their new management.
All right. Thanks for that plan. Tim in Luck, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I want to say yes. If we can give money to the banks and the amount we're giving, we can sure loan money to the car makers to save the industry. And I'd also like to add that I think we have the best government money can buy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim in Luck. Well, that'll do it for us. We were lucky to have Jim Hightower with us for most of the hour, and we want to thank you for filling out, rounding out the hour with your thoughts on the auto bailout that may be voted on in Congress today. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Rob Ferret and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.